Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
Always look forward to the podcast, Jonathan, and of course, I love spending this time with you where we always just talk about so many things, but there are times, Jonathan, that I really love the podcast, and it's when we have guests the caliber of Carl Vaders. And the topic that he is going to cover, and this is going to be a really great, great podcast. So, Carl, first of all, let me tell you that I appreciate so much the work that you are doing, the way that you're touching a particular need with a large audience is absolutely incredible, and thank you for being a part of this podcast as well.
Oh, thank you, Tom. I'm honored by that, and it was actually a big part of my journey was how much help I got from Simple Church.
Oh, wow. That's been a long time ago.
It's been a while. It takes me a while to get around to things. I read it shortly after it came out, but it's been only been in recent years that a lot of the principles in it have really solidified in my own life and ministry.
Well, we look forward to this. And first of all, we want to thank our sponsor, Vander Blumen Search Group, who has been our sponsor since the beginning of, at least since the beginning, since we had a sponsor, yeah. Jonathan.
Yep. And Vander Blumen Search Group is the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. Their fall lead pastor and executive pastor coaching networks are now open for registration, and Dr. Rainer will be speaking at the fall lead pastor coaching network. So if you're a lead pastor and executive pastor looking for a peer roundtable coaching, check it out at vanderblumen.com/coaching. It's limited to only 16 people, so apply today before it fills up.
Jonathan, give us a little background on Carl for our listeners. Many of them will already know him, but yeah. Let's introduce him to those who may not.
Yeah, we linked to Carl quite a bit on the Saturday posts.
Yes, we do.
The Notable Voices. Carl has been a small church pastor for over 30 years, and the most recent 25 years in his current church at Cornerstone Christian Fellowship in Fountain Valley, California, in the Orange County area. His popular blog, Pivot, is hosted at ChristianityToday.com/pivot and focuses specifically on issues related to leading in the small church.
Carl, our theme, there's so many directions that we could go with all the material that you have written and all of the experience that you have, but our theme for this particular podcast is five big problems for small churches. Before we get into those, how common have these themes been for you and your church? How much of this is experiential, and how much of this is hearing from the rest of the world?
Probably half and half. As a small church pastor for as long as I've been, I've experienced just about all of the challenges that you could probably experience in a small church. I've been in a city now for a long time. I was a rural small church pastor for a while, so most of them I've experienced. But I've done a lot of study, and now in the last 3 or 4 years since writing my book and starting the blog, I've spent a lot of time talking with other small church pastors to find out which things are common and which things were just unique to me. Mm-hmm. So the five I've written about here are the ones that are fairly universal.
Okay, well, these will be fun, and this is just going to hit right at the point of need of so many of our listeners, Carl. So let's go to the thesis, and the thesis is small churches are not a problem, virtue, or excuse, but they are susceptible to these five problems. So you may want to expand on that, but let's just let you talk about that thesis for just a moment.
Yeah. First of all, small churches are not a problem. Quite often it's presented that way. I mean, I can't tell you how many conferences, whether denominational or non-denominational, where I'll hear the main speaker say, 80% of our churches are under 100 and 90% of them are under 200, which is universally true for across denominations, as you know.
Sure.
And then almost always the next sentence out of their mouth is, we have to fix this, as though the percentage of small churches by itself is a problem. But it's not always a problem, because if the church is actually growing in a particular region, that is, the percentage of Christians is actually growing in the population, that's usually happening because a whole bunch of small churches are being planted. And then if the church is dying, then the big churches are becoming smaller. So the percentage of small churches to big churches doesn't change whether the church is growing or shrinking in that region. So small churches are not a problem. We need more information than simply how many small churches there are to know whether the small church is whether the church is healthy in an area.
That's a good word. Yeah. I mean, the statistic in itself does not indicate that we have this virus of small church problems. This is just simply the reality of it, and the church may or may not be a healthy church regardless of size.
Yeah, exactly. So they're not a problem. So I don't approach it as a problem. Secondly, they're not a virtue. I'm just not going to go along with any of the small churches. Every once in a while, I know you'll hear it too. Well, the only reason our church is small is because we're the only one in town preaching the true gospel. Mm. I just want to go, oh, nonsense. If you think you're the only one preaching the true gospel, then I got a pride problem I want to talk to you about.
There you go. Preach, Carl. Preach.
There's nothing more virtuous about a small church than a big church, and I am not in any way anti-big church. I mean, how can you not be thrilled when thousands of people gather together in one place to worship Jesus? But I'm also thrilled when thousands of people gather to worship Jesus in 100 different locations in small groups. Big or small doesn't matter as long as we're gathering to worship Jesus. So small isn't a virtue. And then thirdly, it's not an excuse. Just because you're small doesn't mean that you can't do good ministry. There is not a single command to the church in the New Testament that cannot be done by three people.
Wow, that is fantastic. I love hearing all that. Well, we are going to get to those five problems where small churches are highly susceptible. So, Jonathan, let's go with problem number one.
Number one, holding on to stale traditions.
Yeah, this is a fun one, isn't it?
Yeah. Big churches do this too, by the way. Just throwing that out
they
there.
They do. They
but,
do.
But only but, only the small, medium, and large ones
yes,
do it.
Yes, only the small, medium, large churches.
But small ones tend to be a little more susceptible to that. Partially because in a smaller church, the individual relationships have a stronger tug. In a big church, you can kind of create your own culture and your own gravitational pull. Mm. But a small church, you tend to go along with, rather than creating your own culture, because you're not big enough for that, you quite often go along with a culture that was established before. What I've often found, particularly in an unhealthy church, and again, big or small, is that an unhealthy church tends to look like the church used to look either when it was founded or at the last great pastorate.
That's a good word. Remember Brother Bob.
Oh, I know. And every pastor who's followed Brother Bob begins to dislike Brother Bob. Or not Brother Bob himself, but all of the stories about Brother Bob tend to feel like a weight more than a blessing. And that's where a lot of unhealthy churches tend to lock into the last time it was great, mm-hmm. rather than looking in creating new traditions.
And Brother Bob gets better with the years too. Yep. If you go back to Brother Bob when he was there, it probably wasn't nearly as great as it seems in the afterthought.
No. Well, and that's a good point. I read a biography recently about a pastor that was written right after a certain event. And that event's been 25 years, I guess now. Yeah, 25 years. And now looking back, like, and it was kind of scathing at that time, mm-hmm. about what was going on. 25 years later, people talk about the same type of stuff as the glory days.
Yep.
But in the moment, it was not quite the glory days. But now, I mean, it seems like all the bad things get forgotten and people only remember the good things.
You remember that, Jonathan, when I'm gone.
Yes.
Okay.
I'll remember that.
Keep those good times going. All right, let's look at the next of the five problems. Number two, talk to us about poor or non-existent planning.
Yeah, the smaller the church, the more likely this is, simply because the more smaller churches will have a bivocational pastor. So that's one big part of it. And if you're bivocational, you're working your regular job during the week. And if you've got a family, you know, trying to spend some time with the kids and the spouse on the evenings or weekends. And quite often, you're late Saturday night after a Saturday with the family and putting the kids to bed, and you're finally, and so the planning is done Saturday night for Sunday morning.
Right, right.
And the longer you stay on that track, the more you will stay in an unhealthy mode. And it's not even about whether or not the church gets bigger. It's about whether or not the church gets healthier. You've got to spend at least some time every week doing planning beyond this Sunday. And the smaller the church, the more susceptible you are, because you're limited in people who can spend time planning. That's one of the biggest challenges for a small church pastor.
So how does that bivo pastor, which is typically the case, how does he get out of that rut? How does he create a more healthy planning mode?
Yeah, I do a thing I call the 3-2-1 method of planning, which is spend 3 hours a week, 1 hour looking 3 months out, spend 1 hour looking 2 months out, and spend 1 hour of your week looking 1 month out.
Good word.
And if you do that every week, that's like a 40-hour, that's like 52 hours per the week. That's better than a 40-hour work week with some advanced planning.
Good.
And anybody, if they plan for it and set it aside and take the time for it, can find 3 individual hours each week to be thinking and dreaming, 3 months out, 2 months out, 1 month out. And then getting that started can be a challenge. But once you've got that rhythm going, then by the time this Sunday rolls around, you've already spent 3 months worth of 1 hour per week thinking about it and planning about it. Now, that's just a first step. Eventually, it has to go longer term than that. But for the Bivo pastor who's stuck in the trap of the Saturday night scramble, mm-hmm. that's the next step to start thinking about.
Hey, has your pilgrimage included any bivocational ministry?
I have not. No, I've been blessed to be able to be working full time, and I've been blessed with a wife who's actually picked up the slack by working either part or full time along the way with me as well. But I've not had to carry a second job.
And so you have heard from a lot of Bivo pastors, I am sure, through the ministry that you have.
A whole bunch of them, and more every day, who are, you know, hearing and reading things that, you know, they feel like for the first time somebody at least sees that they're there.
Right.
Because quite often, most of the teaching we get because and the names that we know are from larger churches simply because the visibility makes them visible. The size makes them visible.
Sure.
And so smaller churches feel invisible, and just having my voice saying, hey, I get it too, I've been in the trenches with you, is a real comfort to them. And so I'm learning from them and then passing on bivocational principles rather than coming from myself.
Yeah, mistake number 3 that you list here is not enough assessment or evaluation.
Yeah, it's a continuation of the planning issue, but it's planning is looking ahead and assessment is looking behind us in order to look ahead. And so every time we do an event, we always ask ourselves what went right, what went wrong, why it went right or wrong, and what we can do to improve it the next time. And taking even just a few minutes every time to make those assessments can help you make it better the next time. We do it for every Sunday service. We do it for every special event.
I'm interrupting, but that is really, really ingenious, Carl, because you said it, and I was about to ask you, but you said it. It only takes a few minutes, and those few minutes can be paradigmatic for the future of the church by just doing a little bit of evaluation.
Yeah. And the sooner after the event you do it, the less time it takes.
Yeah. Wow, that's good.
Because that's probably something you can do in like a group text on Sunday afternoon. You know, everybody gets home after lunch. And, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, what are your 4 things? And boom, 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 boom. And you can compile them and you've got something to work toward the next week.
Yep, absolutely. Because it's fresher in your mind. If you do it quickly afterwards, you're good. If you wait even a couple weeks, you start forgetting what event was that, and it starts mixing the 2 Sundays together. Do not let, if you can do it within a week of the event, that's the sweet spot.
Here, these are some incredible tools for these pastors, yeah. Jonathan. And the church leaders.
Not just for small church pastors.
Oh, for any of them.
Yeah.
Hey, put aside this much time for future planning, and it's very modest. Put aside these few minutes for evaluation and watch what it can do for your church.
Yeah. It makes you a better leader, makes you a better pastor.
Yep. I love these handles that we're getting here. All right, let's go to number 4, Jonathan.
Too much inward focus. We haven't talked about that hardly at all on this podcast.
Never talked about inward focus at any point.
Yeah, I'm actually working on a future post about a church that I was in recently where I was gone for the weekend. I wasn't speaking that weekend. I got to go to a really great church. And as I drove away from the church, I thought, I felt refreshed. I felt revitalized. The worship was fantastic. The preaching was practical and biblical. The people were friendly. I left feeling filled up. And my first thought was, I'm filled up for the week. And my second thought was, it's a shame this church will never reach their community.
Wow.
And the reason I thought that was everything on the inside was great, but it was all in interior.
Wow.
It was nothing exterior. Even their building had all of the hidden clues that basically said it's just for us and not for you.
And now give us some, without trying to be too specific, give us some clues on, you know, if pastors can maybe see that in their own building.
Signage for one. I drove by it twice before finally stopping and going, oh, this must be it here.
Wow.
Because it was kind of hidden in the back way a little bit. And then where to park and where the front door was, When I walked in, nobody greeted me. Everybody was hanging out and having great fun themselves. I don't know what it is about churches, but people, not only do they like hanging out with their same friends, but they want to do it right in the doorway.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually make new people have to physically push their way past other people's relationships in order to get into the building.
Wow, you were breaking up holy huddles just to get there, Carl.
Exactly. And then once I got in, like I said, it was fantastic. I was refreshed. It was great. But as long as they only do the interior and not show that interior on the exterior, they're never going to impact their community. And it's a shame because it's a great church.
Hmm. Did you have an opportunity to leave them any information on a card or anything? Did you hear from them? Or did you not leave anything?
I did. I knew the pastor, so I talked to him afterwards and let him know some of what I saw. And I'm being very careful in case he listens. but I didn't feel like I got through. Let's just put it that way.
All right. Well, that's a great story. You visited a church, you were refreshed, but you knew that very few people would even know about that church. I guess since you knew the pastor, that you probably didn't do this, but you didn't happen to look at their website ahead of time, did you, to see what was on there?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Well, you've just said enough right there.
All right. We'll get Carl in trouble.
Yes. Yeah. We are. We'll stop there. All right, Jonathan.
All right. And the final mistake here that you list is depending on the pastor instead of making disciples. It goes back to, you know, equipping the saints to do the work of the ministry.
Yeah. This is actually something that our church is very, very purposefully leaning into in the last 4 or 5 years with greater intention than we ever have before. The old school paradigm was once you hit certain figures, I think it was one staff member for every 200 people.
Mm-hmm.
Where we live in Orange County with the latest stats that just came out for Orange County are that at $84,000 per year income, you are still considered low income for a family of four in
Orange
County.
Goodness gracious. That is a wealthy county. We all know that one. Wow.
Because the average house in our town goes for $730,000.
My goodness.
And nobody's driving past these homes going, ooh, ah, they're average homes. So they're multi-generational. Everybody, you know, my house is multi-generational. Three generations living in our house, with the kids trying to make enough money to be able to move out on their own. And it's not because they're buying lattes. It's because houses cost $750,000. Peace.
Wow.
So in that situation, we're not going to have the money to be able to hire a staff every 200 people because the amount of money they need to earn to live in a reasonable way in our county is more than 200 people together can really provide.
Yeah.
So we are having to go back to, the New Testament that says, your job as pastor is to equip the saints to do the work of ministry, not to hire a ringer from the outside. The more we do that, the better the church is and the healthier it is.
And that kind of even flows into, you know, we need more churches. We need to plant churches, but it's really tough to plant churches in those areas because, I mean, just trying to think about the traditional, you know, drop-in planter that is funded from the outside, it's virtually impossible to fund a church plant like that, especially multiple ones.
Exactly. And in the rural, they have the problem of just getting someone who will come.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you about that.
Everybody's got their challenges in bringing people in. And in some of the stats that I know you guys are very well aware of the regular attender going from 3 times a week attendance to 3 times a month attendance,
mm-hmm.
that now makes the availability of people even less. So we have to lean into it. I regularly tell my congregation, if you are under the delusion that you are paying me to do ministry for you, let me break that bubble.
Yeah.
It is my job, according to the New Testament, to equip you to do the ministry. And we're going to do that together. And when we do, and when they catch that vision, oh, what a wonderful thing it is when you've got more and more leaders being developed within your own congregation. It's extraordinary.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you'd served in rural churches and, you know, now in a big city area there in Orange County. Some of these mistakes, is there a rural-urban divide in these, or just it doesn't matter? I mean, obviously, all of these mistakes we see churches of every size make, But do do rural churches have maybe a different take on it than urban churches?
No, the reason I used these five in this particular post was because I really felt they are pretty much universal, cross-denominationally, cross-regions in the country and the city. That's the reason those five are there. I don't see much of a difference between city and urban.
Hey, Carl, before we go, I want to find out a little bit more about the background of your blog, Pivot. It's hosted at Christianity Today. You can see in the show notes, listeners, christianitytoday.com/pivot. Give me a little bit of the history about it, because this we connect to you all the time, and we love your material. So how long have you been doing it, and what's been going on there?
Yeah, thanks. Well, living in Orange County, I got discouraged, very discouraged, about 8 or 9 years ago that our church did not grow big. We actually grew to about 400 for a short period of time. We went from 180 to almost 400 in about just over a year after we found the local Caffa Gymna Torah Librarium to rent.
I love it.
And we can all picture that room right now.
Yeah. So we grew from 180 to 400 in about just a little over a year. And then in under a year, we were down to under 100. And
then
we were building again.
Wow.
And so I had to assess what in the world went wrong. And the short story of it is I moved willingly from shepherd to rancher, from pastor to manager, but I'm not gifted to be a rancher manager. I'm gifted to be a shepherd pastor.
Oh, wow. That's a great word.
So when we grew and we were 400, I made all the moves, but I was spending my time doing management, doing hiring of staff, arguing with City Hall, trying to raise money, looking for facilities, and I'm not built, gifted, or fulfilled doing any of that. And so the church fell apart because the pastor was miserable.
Wow, what a word.
And the pastor stayed.
And I stayed. I almost didn't. Almost didn't. But I stayed. And and they kept me. That's even a greater miracle. And then after that, I said, okay, if this is my gifting, then how do I do this really, really well? See, I don't want churches to be small. I want small churches to be great.
That's a good word.
You know, you don't need to want churches to be small any more than you want water to be wet. I mean, most churches just always have been small and always will be small. So instead of making them feel guilty that they don't get bigger, let's figure out how to make these small churches great small churches. And so that was what I started doing. I wrote my book, The Grasshopper Myth. Then I took the leftovers, basically, that didn't fit in the book and started my blog at newsmallchurch.com. And after about a year of writing, Christianity Today noticed and asked me to move over with them.
That's great. Well, Jonathan, this is rich stuff. Our listeners are going to just jump all over this. And I know that our listeners also will be moving over to Pivot at christianity.com/pivot and reading him on a regular basis. Carl, thank you so much for giving us this time. Thank you for your perspective. And thank you for your gift to the kingdom through your writing that so many are reading.
And thank you to you, too, both of you. Thanks.
Jonathan, we thank our sponsor, Midwestern Seminary. And the work that they are doing, incredible work they're doing.
Yep, Midwestern Seminary is one of the fastest growing seminaries in North America and trains leaders for the church. The local church is God's plan A for the proclamation of the gospel, and there is no plan B. And this is Midwestern's vision and heartbeat, equipping pastors and other ministry leaders who are called to expand God's mission in the world through the local church. At Midwestern Seminary, they train leaders for the church. Visit them online at mbts.edu and begin your ministry training today. That's going to do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing words, Dr. Rainer?
I love it when we at TomRainer.com, Rainer on Leadership, Church Answers, find like-minded ministry strategic partners. We have had that with Carl, and we'll continue to have that. And Carl, we'll continue to share your message with our audience with gratitude for what you're doing. One more time, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks again for joining us today here on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and Google Play and your favorite podcasting app. And join us online at TomRainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.